from 6 on 2FM.
Yes, well, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for driving us through another summery afternoon. It is Wednesday, June 14th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, we'll have the latest news from the Republic of Ireland camp as they begin their Euro 2024 qualifying campaign this Friday. Continue, I should say, their qualifying campaign this Friday. Greg Allen and Doug Ferguson will be dialing in live from Los Angeles ahead of the US Open with plenty of storylines already, even before round one tees off. In Gaelic Games, Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray will be giving us their take on the respective Ladies Football and Camogie Championships with some big clashes to look forward to this weekend. And if that wasn't enough, I'll also be chatting to Sligo Football captain Niall Murphy ahead of his side's clash with the Dubs on Sunday. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. Good evening. It's great to have your company. Nadine Doherty is sitting across from me. Nadine, how are you?
I'm excellent. And we were just chatting earlier. It's so long since I was last in studio with you.
I don't usually do Wednesdays anymore.
No,
I don't think.
And the last time I was in, because I was away myself last week, me and Marie were here and you had your soccer final.
I did.
You win?
We did. Won on penalties, yeah.
Brilliant.
And I feel if I mention any more United Church League football, I am definitely getting my P45 from RTE.
Okay, well, I'll stop.
All news is local, though, Nadine.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Any reason to bring up the Richard Knight Cup victory for Shelburne SSC FC.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, thank you very much. Let's stick with soccer then, and in a bit of a grander scale, I think. I did say Ireland begin their qualifying campaign. Of course, I should say continue their qualifying campaign. France was the first fixture. We have the meeting with Greece this Friday and then Gibraltar on Monday. And our man, Tony O'Donoghue, is in Greece at the moment. And he caught up with Troy Parrott ahead of the fixture because Ireland, of course, looking to continue their good form, and Troy himself, from that France match.
I think everyone's seeing the performance we put in against France at home, and I think it's just taking that and bringing it into the two games that are coming up. Force Greece, we're fully focused on, and coming out here to get a win.
Well, we look at that France game, you weren't involved, unfortunately. I mean, you've been suffering from injuries as well. What is the situation at the moment?
It's just the way the cards fell. I done well to make it back for the camp. I was injured, I had a long injury, I done well to make it back, and I just wasn't at a stage where I would have been ready to play in a calibre of such game. I've come quite a bit since then, and I can't wait for the game coming up.
Tell me about the injury and how you've had to rehab it.
Yeah, it was tough. So I tore my hamstring, basically. It was tough. It was a long time out. The rehab was quite straightforward, to be fair, just letting it heal and then building the strength back up, which I've done. And since the last camp, I've had a lot of games, I've played a lot of games, and I feel sharp now, so ready to go.
Talk to me about your club situation. You're still obviously a Tottenham Hotspur player. You spent most of the season at Preston, and do you know where you are on that score?
No, I'm just waiting to see what happens, what goes on. Obviously, when I left to come here, there was still no manager. There's a new manager now, so I'll go back in pre-season, try to show him what I can do, and then go from there. But as of now, I'm not sure what's the situation is.
How frustrating is that for you? Because you're at the stage of your career now where you do need to be playing, and obviously I take it that Tottenham is the place you'd like to be playing.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say it's frustrating. I'd say that's just football. There's not much I can do about it. I could just go with it and try to do what I can, but ultimately I want to play at Tottenham. I've always said that. That's where I want to be, so whatever steps I can take to get me there, I'm willing to take.
We saw your Preston club mate, Tom Cannon, decide this week that he'd have to reflect on his future. That's a difficult one for him, and I guess it happens both ways. We have the likes of Mikey Johnson, who could have played for Scotland, in with us now.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what to say on that. I guess it's his decision, whatever he decides to do. I wish him well.
Looking at the Ireland front line, you're always in competition for places, but you've got Evan Ferguson coming in now and only 18. I mean, how do you rate him? You were the golden boy once, and now it's his mantle.
Yes, yeah, it's nice to see someone else coming through. But as everyone probably knows, we've got five attackers in the squad now, five strikers kind of in the squad now that are really good. We're all fighting with each other to play. All of us want to play, but we all have a really good relationship. So having that many strikers in the team that are all good can only benefit us all, bring the best out of each other, and that's what we need to do. Ultimately, it's on us to score the goals and to score the goals and win the game. So that's what we need to do.
Well, hopefully there will be plenty of goals to report. And don't forget, you can hear live commentary of that one, Greece versus the Republic of Ireland, the Euro 2024 qualifier, on a very special extended Game On this Friday.
Game On.
Golf.
But from football to golf, I am pleased to say that two of the best golf journalists in the world join us now, Greg Allen and Doug Ferguson, live from LA. Gentlemen, great to chat as always. Let's just dive straight in. US Open tees off tomorrow. Plenty of Irish interest in it. But the news this morning, late last night, just on the PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan, who is recuperating from a medical situation. What's the latest on that one, gentlemen?
I'm going to defer to Doug on this. Obviously, he deals with Jay Monahan PGA Tour affairs week in, week out. We have this extraordinary scenario with regard to Jay Monahan, who has taken ill. We're only told that it's a medical situation, no more depth than that. And so his position has been taken over by two other officials, senior officials on the PGA Tour, Ron Price and Tyler Dennis. They'll take over the operations work that Jay Monahan does. But Doug is his ear to the ground week in, week out, and probably has a lot more intel on this than I do. Doug?
We actually were just, Greg and I were just talking about this. One of the, someone who's connected to Jay, mentioned that it was exhaustion related. That makes sense. I just don't know if that makes so much sense that speculation has become, here's what I heard. So we really don't know, but it is odd. I'm not sure he was expected to be at the U.S. Open. I think Jay normally is at the majors, but I never expected him to be here this week just from the optics of such an extraordinary week. Of not that he's afraid to show his face, just maybe not the best timing. I think what we should probably look forward to is next week in Connecticut at the Travelers. He was meant to meet with players and meet with the media, and we'll see if we get that far. What really got the attention, even though there was so much secrecy behind medical situation, it's got to be serious enough to turn over day-to-day operations to two of his executives.
Absolutely. Like, with this coming just a week after that shock announcement on the merger, Greg, what's the overall mood among players ahead of round one tomorrow before we even chat about the golf?
I think that the lack of clarity on everything, the players have just one after another said this week, we know nothing, we know no details. Even our own players that I've spoken to, Shane Lowry, who was actually at that players meeting last week in Canada, the Canadian Open, after this announcement was made of the merger of PIF, the Public Investment Fund, which of course is the fund which funds the LIV Golf Series, also the merger of the PGA Tour with the PIF, and the DP World Tour involved in that as well. So this has been reverberating for 9 days now, and no more clarity clear here. And I do think that there have been players who've been, you know, voicing how annoyed they are, not just like how taken aback they are, annoyed they are about, you know, the way that this was done, how quickly it was done. John Rahm basically saying, using the word betrayal in terms of how the PGA Tour management have dealt with the players. And like, it's like the players are almost pawns in this and not necessarily key players, if you pardon the expression. It's very, very murky, because Jay Monahan, obviously, before he took his position, or took ill, rather, you know, gave very, very, very vague indicators that this was something that they would work on and that they would be hoping to give more detail in the near future, without giving any detail of a deadline. Some people in this have said, in fact, Rasiral Rumayan, the Public Investment Fund governor of that massive public investment fund worth $700 million, he said that this could be resolved in the matter of weeks, and that just doesn't frankly sound plausible, especially with the uproar to some degree of the players. And I think, you know, players generally as a grouping don't necessarily, you know, come together in unison in the way that they have in saying how annoyed they are about this. And I think this was somewhat unexpected. I don't know, Doug, would that be fair to say? I think it's unexpected to some degree, the way that players have almost united, like almost a political voice, to say they don't like the way that they've been treated over the last week or so.
I think it depends on which player you talk to. I think Rory was interesting last week in terms of having a little bit more patience to let's see where this goes, but there's no doubting the initial shock. I'm a little curious about this, and I think it all goes back to the mistakes that Jay made early on. For this to be so secretive and to not include the players doesn't surprise me, because if you involve the players, you'll never get anything done. We've seen that with pace of play, for crying out loud. But I think with Jay pounding away at the source of the funding and bringing a degree of morality into it to turn about and become partners with enemies, I think is where a lot of the betrayal comes from. I mean, we've heard some of the nonsense from the American side. To me, is when you talk about what are you going to do for the boys who stayed loyal? How do you reward us for this? And that's a fair question, but it's not a fair question to be asked by Chess and Hadley, who sounded like, well, we don't know what he sounded like last week. Draw your own conclusions. Who said I should be, you know, compensated, when I think most people in Saudi Arabia would probably have to Google who Chess and Hadley is. There's only about probably 10 to 12 players that we're dealing with in terms of, here's my decision. I'm gonna, as Rory said 3 or 4 years ago, I want to be on the right side of history, and this is what they've done. They're the ones who I think have the biggest stake in all of this.
It certainly will be interesting to see if the US Open is suffocated by this merger talk as the days go by. Greg, you've been chatting to a couple of the Irish golfers. Shane Lowry finished 12th in the US PGA, 16th in the Masters this season. Will the glimpses he has shown this season overall bode well as he looks to add a second major title now?
He said himself he doesn't really feel that he's put four rounds together, and that's what this whole business is. You know, there's no point shooting five birdies in a row around Memorial, a very tough course set up like a US Open course to some degree, and that was only a few weeks ago, but then not capitalizing on it and pushing forward from it. And that, you know, and Shane would be the first person to admit that you know, you if you generate momentum, you have to actually keep going with it. So I think he's a little bit short on the confidence that's required to keep going a good run of birdies. He seems to be making birdies quite, you know, as much as people focus sometimes on Shane's putting, he does actually hole a lot of putts outside of the 10-foot range. You can't make birdies without doing that. And I think he feels happy enough that he's remedied some of his putting issues over the last 3 to 4 weeks. Look, Shane had a great year last year. When you consider that it was far and away the best year he had since winning the Open in 2019, but just like Rory had a great year last year, it's hard to follow up. It's what they call the difficult second album, you know. And I think, you know, Shane is playing well enough. In fact, if you compare it to his form going into the Open in Portrush, Shane is in that exact same form, bubbling but not quite firing. That would be the situation I put Shane in right now.
Okay, well, Shane tees off alongside two-time major winner Justin Thomas and 2018 US Open runner-up Tommy Fleetwood at 3:40 p.m. Irish time. Doug, speaking of tee times, Rory McIlroy will tee off with Liv's Brooks Koepka and former Masters champion Hideki Matsuyama in the first round on Thursday. I mean, we talk about the narrative surrounding this, putting McIlroy and Brooks together. I mean, how much extra focus is going to be on Rory now as a result of this coming together?
It is a very peculiar pairing when you go back to some of the comments that Rory made in the heat of all this last summer. And I'm trying to gauge how they get on. There's still, you know, as much angst as there is around all this stuff, there's still some adults in the room, and by and large, depending on the personality, I think most of these boys have been able to get along just fine. I think Rory and Brooks actually will be fine. Brooks is not one that is looked upon, at least on U.S. shores, as being someone who's been talking too much and stirring the pot, if you will. I think it'll be fine. I think Hideki Matsuyama, unfortunately, is going to be left out of the conversation again. I don't think there will be much conversation, but, you know, in terms of Rory's own issues of coming up on 9 years without a major, playing with a guy for whom they've been coming quite easily lately, I'm not so sure that doesn't add to the burden.
Yeah, I know Rory's mentioned, Greg, big steps of progress made, but can he bring an end to that 9-year barren run?
Look, 9 years is a long time to have not had that feeling of winning a major. I think of much more concern at the moment is how Rory is not, in a similar way to Shane Lowry, not putting four rounds together. He has had chances on Sunday, several this year, and last week at the Canadian Open, whatever about, you know, what happened in the days before the Canadian Open, I think it was remarkable that that Rory McIlroy put himself in position to win the Canadian Open on Sunday. But then on Sunday, he wasn't there. Like, you know, he just didn't get off to a good start, bogeyed a hole early, and that was it. He was gone. You know, players like Nick Taylor was birdieing four holes of the first seven, I think, on the front line in the Canadian Open. And suddenly the one shot gap was to three or four or five within a few holes. And so, you know, majors, winning majors is important, obviously, to Rory. But winning again on the PGA Tour is also important. Now, he hasn't won in 2023. It's only June. There's plenty of time for Rory to pick up on two, three wins before the end of the season. But we're in the fillet of the major season now. This is when he has to perform. And I would have liked to have seen him had a PGA Tour win before he got here, before having to have this, you know, burden of this 9 years, and next year it'll be 10 years if he doesn't win this year. And you know, it's every year, it's just one more year that he hasn't won a major. And I always remember when Rory won the PGA Championship in 2014 in Valhalla. He reversed into that in many ways. He was three shots behind entering the back nine, and he hit a three wood off the neck of the club on the 10th hole in Valhalla. It wasn't a good shot, but it was the right bad shot for the contour of the fairway, because the ball went from around 260 yards up to 7 feet from the pin off the neck of the club. It was the most fortuitous eagle you could possibly imagine. He wasn't really going forward in that final round in Valhalla 9 years ago in 2014 in the PGA for his last victory. And when he sat among the media and with the trophy in his hands, there was a sense that he said, is this all it takes to win? He didn't actually say this, but there was a sense that, is this all it takes to win a major? Is this what it takes to win a major? You know, get one good break and suddenly it changes the tempo of losing a lead, because he had the lead, a joint lead going into the final round in 2014. And, you know, he did get a break. It generated new momentum. And in a bizarre conclusion to that PGA Championship, he went on and won it. But there was a sense of that, my fourth major, I couldn't imagine that I'm going to win four majors by the age of 25. And look at the way I won it. You know, it didn't take as much as I thought it would take. And since then, he's had nothing but how difficult it is to win a major. And so his thought process is much more pessimistic with regard to the ease of how to win a major in the last 9 years. And with each year that passes, it gets harder and harder, I think, for him to envisage what it'll be like to win a major. And all you need to do to back that up in terms of, you know, psychology, is last year, Open Championship, playing in the final round, Victor Hovland is his playing partner. He thinks Victor is the only person he really has to look at, you know, in terms of an opponent. Victor doesn't turn up on the day. Rory is playing fairly conservative golf, but he doesn't really bank on Cameron Smith coming with a train on the back nine, alongside Cameron Young, who also came like a train in the back nine. And suddenly he was overtaken because he had been cautious all day. I mean, that was not the Rory that won the USPGA back in 2014, nor the US Open in 2011 by 8 shots, nor Kiowa Island PGA by 8 shots. It's just a different Rory, and I think he's just got to find a way of winning big tournaments again. And he'll never be the same Rory that he was when he was in his early 20s, so he has to find almost a different perspective.
I do want to get your predictions, gentlemen, but before I do, Greg, Seamus Power, an Irish amateur, Matthew McLean are grouped up New Zealander Ryan Fox, 25-5 Irish time tomorrow. Padraig Harrington plays alongside fellow veteran and LIV Golf advocate Phil Mickelson and Keegan Bradley at 9 p.m. Irish time. What should we be expecting from the rest of the Irish contingent?
I mean, Seamus Power hasn't as good a season as last year. He told me as much, that it's a fact that he's just playing well, top 20s, you know, maintaining a ranking inside the world's top 50, but he actually feels his short game is back. That was one thing that wasn't quite as good as it was. And so all of these things, you know, you get off to a good start and you find yourself in contention, as Seamus Power did at the US Open and the USPGA last year. And he had two brilliant tournaments, 9th in the USPGA, 12th in the US Open, but he hasn't found that form yet. Matthew McLean will do brilliantly to make the cut. This is a very, very tough golf course. Any amateur on this golf course is going to find it difficult. I do think that Padraig Harrington believes that he can challenge in a major. Whether he feels he can challenge around here, I spoke to him yesterday. He didn't sound all that, you know, optimistic. But I really want to ask Doug about one player here, and that's Scottie Scheffler, who only happens to be the world number one, and has honestly, I think he's the bookie's favourite. And he has these putting statistics recently which look like they're, you know, in stark contrast to his ball striking statistics. The putting not so good, the ball striking stellar. Is Scottie Scheffler the favorite, the real favorite?
According to the bookies, yes. Not so much according to me. I think what ultimately at a US Open, it's all about holding 5 and 6 foot putts, usually for par. And I don't think this course, as different as it is, will be the exception. I don't even know how to describe the putting, but based on the popular strokes gain stats going on, what was amazing about the Memorial is that Denny McCarthy, who made it to a playoff, finished 20 shots ahead in strokes gained on putting of Scotty, and Scotty finished one shot out of a playoff. And I don't think anything illustrates it greater than that. He's gone to a new putter. It's in his head that putts aren't going in. I don't think they're necessarily bad putts. It's just in that stretch, like Rahm was in last year, actually, that they just don't go in. But this is, again, a U.S. Open where short game and getting up and around the greens for par are key, and that usually leads to holding the 5 to 8 to 10 foot putts, and I'm just not seeing it.
And just about the three favorites, because it does look like Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, and Scottie Scheffler have separated themselves from the rest of the world, and I mean separated themselves from the rest of the world, and behind them is, in that other category, Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, and it's interesting about the separation too, because we're in an era of golf with so much depth that to me it's very difficult to separate yourself, and yet they've done it. We look at John and Scottie from probably a U.S. Tour and a world ranking standpoint, and then you have to throw Brooks in because we're at a major, and he never loses these things, or never looks like he's going to lose them. So it's those three, and then there's Rory, and you know, we talk about Canada. I was thinking back to Memorial, same deal. I think all eyes were thinking this is time for Rory to win. He's just got to find a little bit of freedom. I also question how well he's going to know this golf course, having just turned up and probably get in 18 holes by the time of the start of it. I think that's his biggest issue.
Well, gentlemen, unfortunately time is against us, but I'm going to put you on the spot now. Greg, I come back to you. Who are you siding with for the win? And also, I want a sneaky each-way shout from you.
I just can't see past John Rahm at the moment, because his California perform is just so good. Winner of the US Open in Torrey Pines, and winner of the Farmers Insurance in Torrey Pines in spectacular manner. He does like it in this part of the world, although the grasses here in LA are much different than they are in Torrey Pines, and grass and your familiarity and your liking of the grasses you're playing on is a huge factor. But I do see John Rahm and Brooks Koepka and Scottie Scheffler. I mean, like, you just throw a blanket over them. And for an outsider, I really do like the form of Justin Rose, and I also like his US Open record. He was obviously the winner in 2013, and he has been, you know, a majors performer, and he's showing form again and might be in his 40s. But Justin Rose, I think he'll get reasonable odds on Justin Rose for an outsider.
Okay, final word to you, Doug. Who's going to win, and a sneaky each way shout?
I think I'm leaning toward the Irish guy. That'd be Patrick Cantlay. Pretty sure he's Irish. I just have a feeling he's due. There's not a single weakness in his game. He went to college just down the block here at UCLA. He's played this course many, many times, and that would be my pick. And then my outside pick, or whatever we call these things, believe it or not, Dustin Johnson. I think he's due, and he loves LA.
Okay, great stuff. Greg Allen, Doug Ferguson, thank you both very, very much. I'm sure you'll be checking in throughout the course of the US Open. We're going to be chatting ladies football with Nadine Doherty and Camogie Whitty from Murray in a few moments. I'm sticking with us here in Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Ladies football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Nadine Doherty, you are still sitting across from me, waiting patiently as we look forward to big weekend in the TG Carr All-Ireland Senior Championship. So there are four fixtures chronologically: Donegal Waterford 1 o'clock, Laois Armagh 2 o'clock, Dublin Kerry 5 o'clock, and Galway Cork at 7:30. Where shall we begin? Well, I suppose as a dub, Dublin Kerry then in Group 3, Cavan the other team in Group 3. What should we be looking forward to from this encounter?
Well, I suppose, Shane, we want to see if Kerry have recovered for a pretty forgettable Munster campaign. You know, they were quite unimpressive, and then they suffered that massive defeat in the final against Cork. Dublin have won Leinster at a canter, beaten Meath twice and comfortably beaten Laois. So it'll be interesting to see how good Dublin are, really, because Kerry obviously set the pace in the league. They haven't gone that far back, even though Munster was poor. So it'll just be interesting to see how they match up. I suppose looking at Kerry, you know, on one hand you could say that some players have lost form, but on another hand you could say other teams have caught up to their early pace. But, you know, they'll be looking for big, big performances from Coach Lynch, especially Aisling O'Connell, Kayleigh Cronin, Louise Navarro-Hurtig, Niamh Carmody, big players, Shane, who really didn't perform in the Munster final. And also with Dublin, I can't wait to see if Sinead Goldrick is back playing with Dublin. She's back in the country anyway, so will she be lining out? That's what I'm excited for. Dublin have been experimenting with their team. I don't think they're there yet, but there's a good blend. I've said it the last few weeks, they're really going nicely. I'm going to go over to Parnell Park for a look and see in person. But it's a very hard one to call, to be honest. But I just feel with Dublin, you know, when any team starts to make, I suppose, a statement for an All-Ireland Championship, Dublin like to maybe put them back in their box with a statement win. Yeah, so both teams will be going into this big time to get that first place, because, you know, no disrespect to Cavan, who are the other team in the group, but you can't really see them making an impression on the group, so they'll be going for first place with this one.
Okay, well, a lot riding on even the first game in the group, with only three teams in the group. 7:30 then in Pearse Stadium, Galway, Cork. I'm right in saying it's kind of two teams going in with contrasting fortunes. Galway, not so good. Cork, very good.
Massively contrasting. I mean, Galway, I suppose we've kind of forgotten about in a sense, because they've only played one competitive fixture in 8 weeks, and that was a Connacht final defeat to Mayo. Mm. They had that massive loss again, you know, to Kerry in that final, and now Kerry, I suppose, find themselves in a similar situation. But I just look at Galway, Shane, at the minute, and I just feel they're not playing to the strengths of their players. They've a squad really of really fast, quick, like lightning quick footballers, really, you know, really good footballers who are excellent at kicking the ball, but they don't kick the ball. They don't let them kick the ball. They play this possession-based football that we've been talking about extensively, and men's football as well. They've only scored 4 or 5 goals in 8 games. And I mean, I just see them as a team who should be scoring goals. I mean, 2 or 3 goals every game. So look, we'll see how they shape up. I'm really looking forward to see how they line out. And then look, as you said, Cork are absolutely buzzing. Hammered Kerry. What I feel with Cork, they've kind of fixed those Achilles heels that they've had for the last few years. They had an issue with the goalkeeper, they had an issue with kickouts. They're gently fixing those things, and they have a plethora of scorers up front. I mean, before that they would have kind of, players who've retired, Orla Finn and Emer Scally and maybe Theo Sullivan's, they would have really relied on 3 or 4. Now they have 8, 9 players, Shane, who are going to get in the scoreboard. But with Cork, I just feel they've yet to put a consistent 70 together, and I think defensively and mentally they're a little bit vulnerable, so it'll be a huge test for them against Galway. I think both teams, this is a massive test psychologically.
And they've 4 players who are going to have to go through the dual issue again.
Aoife might want to touch on that, but every year it's just, I don't know who makes these decisions.
I'm exhausted even bringing up the topic. Yeah. Let us move on then. So they're both on TG Carr. Earlier on Saturday then, Donegal Waterford at 1 o'clock. Your own Donegal? Are we confident?
No, we're not going. No, okay. No, so you're not going to reel me in. No, I'm not going there. Listen, it was a huge win in Ulster, but you have to bring it back. You know, it was their second win of the year. I mean, they had a win against Cavan, a poor enough Cavan side, a win against a decent Armagh side, but an Armagh side who rely on one player, on Amy Mackin, who came off with 15 minutes to go. But in saying that, there's excitement, Shane. There's definitely excitement. You know, the return of Niamh Hegarty and Tanya Kennedy was massive. I wonder if there's players who haven't returned. Are they maybe looking on now thinking, I should have gone back? Listen, they can't be mentioned as All-Ireland contenders, but we'll see how well they do this weekend against this Waterford team, who for me were a bit disappointing in Munster, Shane, to be honest. I thought they would have kicked on from the league, but they were a good bit off Cork and Kerry. But between Donegal and Waterford, it's always a great game. There's always a huge amount of physical, you know, it's very physical, possession based with both teams. Both teams will drop back, and there's always goals. But it's a big test for Donegal, but definitely a new Donegal has emerged. That's for sure, which is really, really positive.
And they've got a new Mead in their group as well. So
yes,
we'll
touch on that next week. Absolutely.
What Mead will bring to the table. It's Waterford who have Mead up first before Mead Donegal is the round 3 fixture. Group 1 then, Laois, Armagh and Mayo in action at 2 p.m. in Port Laois is Laois and Armagh.
Yeah, so listen, it's a repeat of the Division 2 League Final, which Armagh won by 5 points in the end of Shane, but at one stage they were up 3 goals in the first 5 minutes. Amy Mackin, who we've spoken about, dominated, you know, 3-3 in 5 minutes. She was incredible throughout. She did take a knock, as I said, against Donegal. I don't know how fit she is. Listen, if Laois learned anything from that League Final, they have to be more cautious in those first 10 minutes. They have to pack the defence, they have to shut up shop and give themselves a platform to perhaps attack Armagh. I think Aaron Fitzpatrick, one of their top forwards, has gone to the AFLW already. It was reported she was going last week, so a huge loss. But they have firepower up front. You know, they've Mo Nearney and Sarah Fitzgerald. And listen, looking at Armagh, again, it's psychological again with them and a lot of teams. Huge defeat to Donegal. I mean, they were massive favourites, Shane. They'd beaten Donegal 2 weeks previously, very comfortable. Complete collapse altogether. Armagh do struggle against a running game. So if Laois are able to get that going, they might be in with a chance. But, you know, Laois did have a poor Leinster campaign, so they'll struggle, I would feel. But again, how Armagh have recovered from that Ulster final, we'll see at the weekend.
Okay, will be interesting. Four cracking championship ties on the way. We're going to be chatting Camogie very shortly, but first, I believe Tony O'Donoghue, a man committed to the cause, trains, planes, automobiles, travelling from Turkey to Greece, yet you still managed to take an L call with us, Tony.
Do you know what? I hope the Irish squad had an easier passage from Antalya in Turkey to Athens, and I'm sure they did. I even had a drama on the flight with the plane on the ground in Antalya, and I was in row 7, and there was a big kerfuffle down the back of the plane, and there was an actual fight broke out, and the police had to be called onto the plane, and there was a lot of shouting and roaring, and everyone was a little bit horrified, I think. And then, of course, people had to be removed from the aircraft and then all the bags had to be done again. And, you know, one of those days, Shane, I'm sure you've had something similar,
them,
but it was,
Tony,
it was extraordinary.
Well, listen, talk to me about the football side of things. So how are we fixed?
Yeah, well, I mean, Antalya has been, you know, by accounts of the players and the management, has been very good for the Ireland squad. I mean, they've been there 9 days, which is a huge amount of time in terms of the build-up to an international game. And they felt they needed that, of course, because so many of the players have been over a month without football. And, you know, in order to try and get the fitness right and the sharpness back, and that's going to be hard. Any game in June has traditionally been hard for Ireland teams and for many teams. And it's the sort of thing you'll have to do if you were to be appearing in tournament football. Ideally, of course, this time next year at the European Championships in Germany, we shall see. But it's a tough group, of course, and we haven't made it any easier for ourselves in losing the opening game to France. So this window, with the two games coming up on Friday, it's Greece here in Athens, and then on Monday it's Gibraltar in Dublin at the Aviva Stadium. So, like, the hope is that we can get at least 4 points out of these two games to remain in contention for qualification. It is a tough group, of course, as we all know, with France and the Netherlands both in the group. The Netherlands the top seed, France only the second seed. But Ireland's preparation has been good. It has been very good. Warm weather in Antalya in Turkey. It's superb facilities there. Gosh, it would put Ireland to shame when we talk about the audit we've had recently of facilities. They stayed in a fabulous hotel as well. They had a fair bit of downtime as well because boredom can be a part of these things. So I think they're ready. I think they're ready to put in a huge performance. What Stephen Kenny has asked for is a historic performance, and ideally to come away from Athens here on Friday night with an away win with 3 points to put us on the board and on the way for hopefully something dramatic, something historic in terms of qualification.
Absolutely. Tony O'Donoghue, thank you very, very much for taking the call. Let you settle into Greece. As promised, Aoife Murray and Camogie is up next.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, Aoife Murray joins us on the line. Aoife, there was plenty of drama last weekend. Wexford scoring 1-4, the last 1-4 of the game to rescue a draw against Kilkenny. And Tip Dublin, I suppose, went the form of Tipperary winning. We're hoping for more of the same drama this weekend. Let us just get stuck right into it. In Group 1, Cork welcomed down to Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And they'll have a point to prove following their opening day defeat to Galway. How will the Rebels respond?
Yeah, I think it's a big game for Cork this weekend, and I think, unfortunately for Cork, they're probably being slightly distracted. I'm sure the management team are taking as much of that distraction away from the players as possible with that dual player clash on Saturday. So I hope that hasn't distracted the players at hand or the players that they're going to have available, because it now is a must-win game for Cork.
Very frustrating that is still an issue. Will they win this must-win game?
I think they will. I think on a panel versus panel, they probably just are a bit too strong for Down. Looking at Down, I suppose they constantly have to go to Mallon to kind of carry them over the kind of scoring hurdles. Whereas I think with Cork, they have a greater scoring threat from around the field. I think, you know, it's probably a point as well for the likes of Amy O'Connor, Saoirse McCarthy, etc., who probably had a quiet first day against Galway, that, you know, it should be a day for them that they can reignite that form and really come to the fore. So I think Cork will still have too much for Down, but it could still be quite a tricky game for Cork. It's basically try and get out there with a win. However, if that's a point or 4 points, it's to get out with a win for them.
Absolutely. So that's 3 p.m. on Saturday. At 5 p.m. on Saturday, Clare versus Galway, the top two in the group after victories on the opening weekend. Plenty of bite in this one, no doubt. Who will prevail in your opinion, Aoife?
Look, for me, you'd look at it and you go, right, well, Clare had that win earlier in the year on Galway. They're top of the table. But then you actually kind of break it down and go, Galway got over Cork. And as I said last week, they got over Cork playing well within their capabilities. So to me, I think that spoke volumes, that they're still able to eke out that victory against opponents that are possibly on top possession-wise. I think that was probably a big point for Galway in the Cork game. Clare played it fairly close to get now with a win against Down. So for me, I think that first round might be a little bit of a wake-up call as well for Galway, that, you know, they really have to start to up that return on play. So for me, I think Galway will still come out of that and be top of the table, possibly at the end of the weekend.
Okay, in Group 3, one match on Saturday, Antrim Offaly, and one match on Sunday, Limerick-Waterford. I'm going to group the matches together and ask you a double question, journalistic rules not to do, but however, Aoife, who's going to come out on top of these?
For me, I think Antrim and Waterford, not to be too direct about it, but Offaly are going through a bit of a torrid time. I know they're probably trying to rebuild, not just at senior level, but I think from underage all the way up, there's a bit of a rebuilding programme going on there. I certainly think they can put up a fight to Antrim, but I think Antrim should come out of that. And I think Waterford, albeit with a few injury worries there, I still would see Waterford coming out on the right side of the victory with Limerick.
Brilliant. Aoife Murray, thank you very much for taking the call. Should be four cracking camogie matches and indeed ladies football matches to look forward to this weekend. Sligo captain Niall Murphy is up next.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, as promised, it is time to chat to Sligo senior football captain Niall Murphy ahead of Sligo against Dublin in Cavan. Niall, I appreciate you taking the time to chat first and foremost. How are you, sir?
All well, Shane, all well. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Listen, you're taking time out from the preparation for the Dubs on Sunday, and the Irish weather is treating you to a warm weather training camp. How are you fixing? How's training been going?
It is, yeah. Weather's been great here down in Sligo today. I think we're at touching 25 degrees, so yeah, got out for me afternoon walk and got a bit of sunshine in. But no, training's going well at the moment. We're out tonight now on Friday. Haven't been together since over the weekend, since Sunday. So yeah, looking forward to get out on it. It's not too often we get to play five or six championship games, so something we've really enjoyed doing and excited about having another crack this weekend.
Yeah, well, you touch on the amount of matches, and I suppose that has been a discussion point throughout the course of this championship so far. Like, where do you stand, I suppose, then, on the format? Matches trump training, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, probably it's something that I've maybe harped on about before, is the training to games ratio being off over, I suppose, my time playing. Like, we would have had situations where we would have had 8, 9, 10 weeks gaps between finishing off the league and playing championship games. So look, I think to bridge that has been brilliant. As I said there, I think we're into game 6 now of a championship campaign, so probably something Sligo have never had the opportunity of doing. So yeah, for us, as I said there, we were always looking to play more games and play more games in the peak time of the year, being the summertime. So yeah, look, it's something that's been great. I think we've, as a group, have really, really enjoyed it. I think we've been, since the league finished, we have only had maybe one weekend off, so we've been every second weekend from then. So it's been really, really enjoyable. I'd happily play games back to back, week after week, instead of, I suppose, long training stints.
Mm. You're not only playing matches, but you're playing matches against top tier opposition. Now, with respect to, say, London and New York in the Connacht Championship, but as a group, have you made even incremental improvements reviewing matches since coming out of Connacht and into this All-Ireland group stage?
it's difficult to know. It's difficult to know. I think it's probably, you look next year at that, where I suppose we go into, we're after getting up from Division 4 into Division 3. It's probably maybe something you'll actually review next year when you say, okay, how have those games helped us prepare for Division 3 next year? But look, it's something we always, I suppose, aspired to do at the start of the year, was to get into the All-Ireland Championship. And look, it's great playing the top teams, the top players. I think, you know, probably we let ourselves down maybe a little bit in the Connacht final, and but we still probably took a little bit of confidence out of it, that, you know, if you took away, I suppose, some of our own mistakes that we did make, you know, we felt we were able to match them in certain areas, and we probably brought that in then to the Kildare game from there as well, where again we had a good show and we came away disappointed with that. So look, yeah, we definitely probably took confidence out of those two games, brought that into the Roscommon game from there, where again we probably left ourselves with a lot to do going down the stretch in the last 5-10 minutes. But I think, yeah, it's something we'll probably look at next year, where you'll actually be able to quantify it and say, okay, yeah, those games really, really did help us. Like, I know Westmeath there, for example, won the Talton Cup last year, and they were probably hoping to go into Division 3 and get promoted from there, and everyone was tipping them for it as well, and maybe that didn't happen for them. So it's hard to know, it's hard to quantify it, but it's something we're definitely enjoying and learning a lot from. But we definitely have maybe taken a small bit of confidence out of it, that we're not a million miles away.
Looking forward, and I know you're going to quantify that as a group, I suppose, but touching on that, and I think I was reading of a couple of comments from an interview you did, now albeit it was a couple of years ago, where you said, I think the skill level between a Sligo and a Dublin footballer is similar enough, broadly speaking, but it's those other aspects, I think nearly it's a confidence thing, and those other aspects you alluded to were, say, commitment, professionalism, looking after yourself. Do you feel that the gap is coming closer because of these games that you're playing now, and do you still kind of hold those views that the skill level, geez, there's not much between you?
I suppose the last part of your question there in terms of skill level, I think, yeah, I've always said that, and I suppose being involved with different teams and I'm playing with lads at college level, I always found that the skill level wasn't massively apart. I suppose the commitment level then was maybe the big thing, whereas in, you know, in Division 1 you probably have, like, you have 30 lads there just buying into everything, that are probably living and breathing Gaelic football. I think as you go down the levels, maybe that number starts to drop off a little bit more. But in terms of skill and I suppose our commitment that I've seen over the last couple of years, it's definitely closed the gap. And it's probably up to, I suppose, like I said, the older lads, the experienced lads, is to pass on information like that to live and breathe it, I suppose, or you know, like put lots of time and effort and hours outside of the training schedule to, I suppose, to improve yourself athletically, physically, in loads of different ways. But yeah, I think, look, we definitely have taken confidence from it. I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago we were probably down, we got relegated, we had a really, really young team, and you know, those guys are probably experienced now, that they've been around for 3 or 4 years, they've played some good championship games, and yeah, our probably medium age group now is in that mid 20 age bracket, so I think that's probably a follow on or a knock on effect of Sligo going well as well.
Is the mindset of a Sligo footballer a bit different to when you started then?
When I started, I came into a panel back in 2012, and around that time Sligo just actually came back down from Division 2, and we had some household names that would be that'd be known all over the country, and then I suppose we lost them around that 14, 15, probably 16, 17 year period, where we'd 6 or 7 massive characters that we lost out on, and probably we lost their experience and, I suppose, wealth of knowledge, and yeah, it probably was a gap from then, and if we'd be able to hold on to a few of those guys who would drop down their knowledge and their experience to the younger guys, would have probably helped a lot more. But that transition probably didn't happen as much as we did want it to. But I definitely think the age profile of our group now is definitely helped in terms of plugging the gap. We've had a couple of lads who involved in Sigerson wins and getting game time at UCD and DCU, and they've accessed then to those bigger players, which always helps as well.
And obviously the success at underage level, do you think that will bring tangible success and sustainable progression, I suppose, for Sligo football?
Yeah, that's, I suppose, the key word is sustainable progression. That's the hope. It's definitely the hope. We haven't done great success over the last 3 years, I suppose, probably hasn't occurred in Sligo football at all. Definitely not in the last 30 years anyway, where we've had, I suppose, back-to-back 20 success, an under-17 Connacht title, an under 20s playing in an All-Ireland final and a school team playing in an All-Ireland final as well. So yeah, look, the hope is that those lads can progress into the senior team. I think there's always probably a little bit of patience and time that's needed with those guys. I've heard I suppose Neil Ewing referenced there on your show before about, you know, Roscommon maybe putting 5 or 6 titles together in terms of under 21 and minor in a Connacht term, and I suppose they're seeing the fruits of that labour now, maybe, where you have a core group of 27, 28, 29, 30 year olds who are actually in the top 6 now in the country. So similar with Cavan, probably would have happened where they would have had multiple underage successes and back in 2020, likewise with Tipperary, they were able to get over the line in their own provinces. So yeah, it's exciting from a Sligo point of view to have that underage success. We probably do need more of it to maybe prolong the excitement at senior level and to try and push on the levels as well. But it's definitely very, very exciting. And yeah, the under-20s have been real revelation for us this year, and they've been brilliant.
It will be interesting to see how it progresses in the medium to long term. I do want to pick your brain on the Doves, but just a final one kind of on the season so far. How do you reflect on Connacht, like a Connacht final, then 1 point from 2 matches in the All-Ireland group stage? Are you better or worse off than you would have expected before you took to the field against London in that Connacht quarterfinal?
To be in this position now, I would have taken your hand off it before our initial championship game. I suppose we would have set ourselves out to get through to that Connacht final. Definitely, given the side of the draw, I suppose all the teams in that side of the draw would have really, really targeted getting through that. So, yeah, and then moving on from that, look, we were disappointed with the Connacht final. I suppose the manner of defeating it, I think it was 14 points in the end. A couple of sloppy mistakes that we definitely learned on, and we probably looked at those to, I suppose, implement the mistakes and learn from the mistakes in the games that followed, be it in the Kildare and Roscommon game. I think, look, yeah, we would have bitten your hand off as well to be in with a shot of going through coming into the last game against Dublin, albeit that even in the 2 games we'd be quite disappointed as well. The first game obviously against Kildare we drew, and we definitely got into a position to win that game. We let it slip probably going down the tracks, but in fairness we ended up going 3 points down and bringing that back, so there's a lot of encouragement from that as well. And then it wasn't a Roscommon game again, probably a couple more ifs, buts and maybes there. We again 15 minutes ago we were 2-3 points down, and yeah, it got away from us there again. So they're small things that you can probably look at, maybe naivety or tiredness seems to be the big one that's associated with that, and the bigger teams jumping on or being able to drain the bench there and in the last 15 minutes just run away with it. But we're definitely in a better place than where we would have hoped to.
Building on that positivity, I suppose, how are you going to approach then Dublin this weekend? Like, will it be a case of trying to go toe to toe, or perhaps try and limit scoring, because you know scoring difference could be crucial in deciding final group standings?
Yeah, it's a funny one. It is a strange one. Like, you're always trying to match up as best you can, but you're probably looking across your shoulder a little bit, and you'd be probably keeping an eye out, or you'd be keeping an ear out for what's going on in another game. By just the fact that score difference could potentially come into it. So there's obviously a situation there where we could all end up on 3 points, be it if ourselves managed to pull a shocker, or if Kildare got over Roscommon as well. So yeah, it's a funny group the way it's shaping up. If the bookies are right, I suppose it'll come down to that score difference element. So yeah, in terms of how we'll approach it, look, we'll definitely be looking to keep the score down as much as possible, and frustrate them, I suppose, at times. But look, we have to get our own scores on the board. We know that we have to try and bring them down the stretch as much as we can. And then I suppose you're probably a small side of you that will be looking into the Kildare-Roscommon game and seeing what's going on over there as well.
Is it an added bonus? It's in the neutral venue of Breffni as opposed to the neutral venue of Croke Park.
Yeah. It was an interesting one. We weren't too sure what was going to happen with that, and yeah, we'd heard a couple of places were ruled out. So, no, look, delighted that it is in a neutral venue. I think given the circumstances of what's needed from our set. So, yeah, interesting one. Cavan's not too far away from ourselves here. Our under-20s, obviously, we were down watching under-20s there a couple of weeks ago, and that down in Breffni Park as well. So we're somewhat. somewhat used to it.
Okay, good stuff. Do you remember the last game in 2001, last competitive championship fixture between Sligo and Dublin? How old were you then?
I don't. I was from seven or 8 years of age. I don't remember, not that old.
Well, you'll be making new history come this Sunday. Listen, Niall, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat, in particular in the game week and the build-up to a big championship fixture. So listen, very best of luck on Sunday.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Sinead, that is all we have time for. Better De Silva is up next after news, so stay tuned to 2FM.